The Israeli strikes on Gaza kill hundreds of Palestinians just after the International Court of Justice orders Israel to take steps to prevent acts of genocide. People around the world hold fresh rallies to express support for Palestinians and call for an end to the onslaught on Gaza. A Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it has used a new type of tactical missile in its latest operations against Israel's military sites. Thank you for joining us. There is no end in sight to the Israeli genocide in Gaza as the regime's warplanes and artillery keep pounding the strip, with the focal point of attacks now being in the southern parts of the besieged territory. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, at least 183 people have been killed and hundreds more injured in Israeli strikes in the past 24 hours. 28 people lost their lives in the southern city of Khan Yunis alone. Israel is also pushing ahead with its indiscriminate strikes on the critical infrastructure, including healthcare facilities, schools, refugee camps, and even UN-run shelters. Doctors Without Borders says Gaza no longer has a functioning healthcare system. Several hospitals in Khan Yunis remain under Israeli siege, despite warnings that many patients are at the risk of losing their lives. A doctor at Nasser Hospital describes the catastrophic situation there.
We have a major shortage of medical staff. We have less than 10% of hospital staff that are working throughout the war. The majority of injured people coming to the hospital are those displaced in schools and residential areas. Medical equipment in the hospitals is almost non-existent, of course. The simplest things in the hospital, such as painkillers and anesthesia tools, are not available. We are trying our best to deal with patients that arrive, and we are trying to keep them alive. We are not trying to treat them as we were doing before. We are just trying to keep them alive.
Several international aid agencies, including the UN, have time and again highlighted the humanitarian crisis in Gaza amid the relentless Israeli bombing and shelling. The regime has, however, defied calls for a ceasefire, with several UN resolution vetoes by Israel's key backer, the United States. Since the start of the Israeli onslaught in early October, nearly 26,300 Palestinians have been killed, the majority of them women and children. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says it has ambushed Israeli forces in central Gaza, killing and injuring several of them. The regime has so far confirmed 220 fatalities amongst its troops on the ground in Gaza. Earlier, we spoke to our correspondent in the Gaza Strip, Moti Abu Musaibeh, about the latest developments there. He says the Israeli regime has intensified its attacks on Khan Yunis, targeting areas near hospitals as well as people who were waiting for aid.
The Israeli warplanes once again targeted the Palestinian civilians who were gathering near Al-Kuwait roundabout, waiting for the humanitarian relief. The Israeli occupation, as the last time, attacked them once again and killed at least three Palestinian civilians, in addition to dozens of the Palestinian injuries. On the other hand, Khan Yunis city till this moment is under heavy bombardment and continuous airstrikes, particularly the western parts of Khan Yunis city, the surrounding areas of Al Amal Hospital and the surrounding areas of Nasser Medical Complex. It was reported that at least a Palestinian civilians from the Palestinian evacuees taking shelter inside Al Amal Hospital was killed after the Israeli occupation forces shot at the hospital. And on the other hand, the Palestinian resistance is still fighting back. It was reported that Al-Qassami brigades and Saraya al-Quds have repeatedly targeted the Israeli tanks in those areas, in those battle zones. And in the meantime, the Palestinian resistance as well continued targeting the surrounding areas of the surrounding occupied territories in Gaza's envelope with different and multiple barrages of the missiles launched from Gaza cities. when it comes to the weather conditions. As for these moments, as we speak right now, the weather conditions are still catastrophic for the Palestinian people, knowing that the vast majority of the people in Gaza are living inside small tents, which cannot be taken shelter by the people in order to endure this kind of unprecedented situation.
The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has released new footage of its attacks on Israeli forces in the Gaza Strip. In the latest operations, Al-Qassam said it targeted an Israeli tank and a troop carrier with rocket-propelled grenades in the west of Khan Yunis. The Al-Quds Brigades, the military wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, said it attacked Israeli military vehicles around Khan Yunis as well. The Al-Quds Brigades also fired rockets and mortars targeting Israeli forces in the Al-Maghazi refugee camp. The group has fired missiles at several Israeli towns, including Sderot as well. Earlier we talked to Canadian author and journalist Eric Wahlberg. He says Israel wants everything in the West Asia region to go up in flames.
The U.S. is allowing this to happen. It's basically saying, go crazy. We don't mind. So we really have to look to the U.S. because Israel is not responsible. It's not a state. It's not a viable state that respects international borders or international laws of any kind. So we really are stuck with the U.S. unless, if Turkey or some tried to go in and provide relief, they would just be bombed by Israel. Israel would like that because Israel wants a regional war. It wants everything to go up in flames. And it just assumes that it will be the survivor, and it will then have, full reign. It's not stopping at all. And the ICJ, I hope the judges are watching. They should have been watching for the last 100 days. I don't know why they, again, it's the U.S. If the ICJ had come out and said, this is genocide, you've got to stop, that all hell would break loose with the U.S. Being the shaitan here. So I really don't know what we can do. The Palestinians have to struggle. They have to endure. But Israel is ready to kill them all. The U.S. is allowing this to happen. It's basically saying, go crazy. We don't mind. So we really have to look to the U.S., because Israel is not responsible. It's not a state. It's not a viable state that respects international borders or international laws of any kind. So we really are stuck with the U.S. unless, if Turkey or some tried to go in and provide relief, they would just be bombed by Israel. Israel would like that because Israel wants a regional war. It wants everything to go up in flames. And it just assumes that it will be the survivor, and it will then have, full reign. It's not stopping at all. And the ICJ, I hope the judges are watching. They should have been watching for the last 100 days. I don't know why they, again, it's the U.S. If the ICJ had come out and said, this is genocide, you've got to stop, that all hell would break loose with the U.S. Being the shaitan here. So I really don't know what we can do. The Palestinians have to struggle. They have to endure. But Israel is ready to kill them all.
Palestinians have slammed Israel's threats against the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees. They urged the international community to counter the regime's efforts to dismantle the organization that provides life-saving support to millions of refugees. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas called on the UN and other international organizations not to cave in to Israeli threats and blackmail. The Palestinian Liberation Organization called on countries that have stopped their support for UNRWA to immediately reverse their decisions. The Palestinian Authority said the UN agency needs maximum support, not cuts. This after Israel claimed several UNRWA staff were involved in Hamas's October the 7th operation. The US, Italy, Germany, and several other countries have stopped funding for the agency. UNRWA chief Felipe Lazzarini slammed the suspension of funding by several donor countries. He said it's shocking to see the suspension of the agency's funds in reaction to allegations against a small group of his staff. Lazzarini added that the lives of many people in Gaza depend on the support from UNRWA. Pro-Palestine rallies continue unabated around the globe, some of them leading to violent clashes as security forces try to disperse the protesters.
Human rights should be respected because it's a matter of humanity. They speak a lot about numbers and Hamas and they compare this to a war. But this is not a war, it's an extermination. Palestinian people there have stones and nothing else, while they are being bombed as if it was raining. They are murdering an entire population and it must be impeded.
The fact that when this all began and the EU wanted to stop giving aid to Palestine, there were only four states that said no. And now we're over 100 days into the genocide, and we still have states that are afraid to call it that as it is. Everyone's afraid to make an enemy out of Israel and, above all, out of the U.S.
Hundreds of pro-Palestine protesters gathered in the Italian cities of Rome and Milan on Saturday, defying a ban by authorities. Demonstrators clashed with police who blocked the streets and tightened security measures. The Greek capital city of Athens saw thousands of protesters marching against the continuation of U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. Protesters held banners and chanted "Free Gaza" as they marched. In the Spanish capital, thousands of people marched in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza, demanding an immediate ceasefire. They waved Palestinian flags and chanted pro-Palestinian slogans. Meanwhile, dozens of people demonstrated in support of Palestine outside the federal courthouse in the U.S. city of Oakland as a case against the country's top officials was being heard.
We are here to submit charges against the executive branch of the government, particularly the President Joe Biden, his Secretary of State, and his Secretary of Defense, for the fact that they have the authority and they have the power to not only to prevent the genocide from happening, but also they are complicit in continuation of it, and they are have the authority to stop it, to end it immediately.
We told our story, we told the court, we told the judge and everybody that could listen that we are descendants of refugees, of people who were forcibly expelled from their country. And then we proceeded to talk about the current Nakba that we are witnessing today.
Protesters brandished Palestinian flags and held placards reading "Free Palestine." American demonstrators also demanded a ceasefire in Gaza, holding a list with the names of those killed in the besieged territory on it. The civil case presented by the Center for Constitutional Rights, a U.S. civil liberties group, has accused U.S. President Joe Biden and some other senior officials of being complicit in Israel's genocide in Gaza. The group is calling for the U.S. to use its influence over Israel to end the regime's crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. Thousands of Israeli protesters have rallied in Tel Aviv, demanding the resignation of the regime's cabinet and an end to its onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Israeli mounted forces attacked protesters and clashed with them after they tried to block traffic. Footage from the scene shows protesters trying to push back the mounted forces. Witnesses say a number of protesters were arrested violently. Protesters demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the release of captives held by the territory's resistance groups. During the past weeks, Israelis have used every weekend to take to the streets in their thousands to mount pressure on the regime's prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. They slammed Netanyahu for ignoring their plea to prioritize the release of captives. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says it has used a new tactical missile in its latest operations against Israel's military sites. Footage released by the movement shows Falak 1 missiles fired at Israel's Male Golani barracks on Friday. The new projectile has a range of 10 kilometers and carries a highly explosive warhead weighing 50 kilograms. Falak 1 missiles have a caliber of 240 millimeters. Hezbollah has also used another new weapon in its operations against the regime. It fired a top-attack anti-tank guided missile in an assault on an Israeli military outpost. The movement released a video depicting the missile's launch, its rapid ascent, and its trajectory towards the outpost on a cliffside along Lebanon's southern border. Hezbollah has been attacking Israeli military sites since October the 7th. On Saturday, it staged seven more anti-Israel operations. In one of them, Hezbollah used Falak 1 missiles to hit a secret command center in the Zabdin barracks in the Israeli-occupied Sheba Farms. With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Photographs and videos published recently by the Zionist regime's head of antiquities authority show that the Israeli regime has stolen artifacts from Gaza that were later displayed in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Middle East Eye has covered this story and tells us more. On 21st of January, Eli Esposito, the director of the Zionist regime's Antiquities Authority, published a series of posts on his Instagram account saying that his deputy went to Gaza to inspect antiquities, which are now being displayed in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. One of his captions accompanying a photograph of looted items says, "A small showcase was placed in the Knesset." In another video, he explains in a caption that the Israeli military contacted the authority to examine a warehouse full of antiques in Gaza. The video shows a warehouse filled with vases, some on shelves and some on the floor, while soldiers roam around the warehouse. Some of the artifacts are damaged, with visible cracks on them. According to Israeli media, in one of the videos, an Israeli soldier is heard calling another and saying, "Did you see the bracelets? Come see the bracelets." Some of the photographs posted show Israeli regime soldiers holding tablets with engravings on them. The director of the Zionist regime's Antiquities Authority, Eli Esposito, later took down the post and issued a statement in Hebrew, recently saying that the items were only examined and left undisturbed at the site. The Israel Antiquities Authority was called by the Israeli army to inspect a warehouse in Gaza containing ancient items, or those that seemed to be ancient. A preliminary examination was conducted by an archaeologist and a written report will be submitted to the Israeli army later on, the post on his Instagram account read. The items were left in their place to avoid any doubt. The Antiquities Authority asked the Israeli army to keep the archaeological artifacts in their place. The post was slammed by a pro-Palestine activist, Khaled Yusri, who denounced the director and called the move a war crime. In an Instagram post, Yusri said, "The theft of antiquities is considered a war crime according to international law. The illicit trade of cultural properties, including antiquities, is a crime under the 1970 UNESCO Convention under measures to be taken to prevent the import, export and transfer of ownership of cultural property." According to a report in the Israeli media, at the start of the war, an archaeology staff officer in the civil administration of Judea and Samaria published a document called Assaulting and Guarding, in which Israeli army soldiers who called to report to the archaeology subcommittee any finds they come across in the fighting in Gaza. Earlier this month, the Gaza government media office said the Israeli regime's army has, since 7th of October, looted money, gold and artifacts worth around $25 million. The Gaza government media office said it had dozens of testimonies provided by residents of the Gaza Strip regarding the thefts. Theft operations occurred in various ways, the first of which was at a checkpoint, such as Salah ad-Din Street, where they stole from the displaced people who had moved from northern Gaza Strip to the south, their bags containing their valuable possessions such as money, gold and artifacts, the office said in a statement. Additionally, Israeli soldiers have also looted the homes of Palestinians after they were forced to flee their homes. Some of the looting was documented by Israeli soldiers. The Zionist regime has come under scrutiny as video footage has emerged of troops carrying out violent and provocative acts that appear to have little to do with furthering their stated objective of destroying the Palestinian movement Hamas. Videos shared online showed theft, destruction of businesses and properties, vandalism, and the installation of Israeli and Jewish symbols across Gaza's neighborhoods. In one video, an Israeli soldier bragged about stealing a silver necklace from Gaza to take back to his friend in Israel. Another soldier stole a rug from a Palestinian home. In other posts, an Israeli officer stole makeup to take as a gift to Israel. While a Palestinian musician told Middle East Eye he was shocked to discover that an Israeli regime soldier had stolen and played his guitar on the rubble of his destroyed home in northern Gaza Strip. At least 195 heritage sites in Gaza, including an ancient harbour and Christian monasteries, have been destroyed or damaged since the start of the war on Gaza on 7th of October. Among the other sites destroyed include Gaza's main public library and the historic Hammam al-Samara, the public baths of the Samaritans. The latter was believed to be the only active hammam, also known as a public bathhouse, remaining in the Gaza Strip. It is located in the Zaytun neighborhood of the besieged enclave. The hammam, or public bathhouse, boasted Ottoman architecture and had several rooms, each with a different temperature. It was managed by Haj Salim Abdullah al-Wazir, and the building was over 1,000 years old. Two museums, the Rafah Museum and the Al-Qarara Museum in Gaza, have also been leveled, according to International Council of Museums in Arab countries. The former had a collection of ancient coins, copper plates and jewellery, while the latter opened in 2016 and had a collection of 3,000 artefacts dating back to the Canaanites. Around 1,000 of the 1,200 mosques have also been partially damaged or destroyed in Gaza, including the Othman Ben Kashgar Mosque in Gaza City's Zaytun neighbourhood, which was built in 1220 at the site where Prophet Muhammad's great-grandfather is believed to have been buried.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and our sincere condolences to you all on the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Zainab Kubra, peace be upon her, the granddaughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Let us reflect on her words when addressing the tyrant Yazid in his court in Damascus. The end of all tyrants is terrible, and God knows the misguided and wrongdoers amongst you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, avoiding suspicion. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Don't suspect other believers. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Generally speaking, Islam has not permitted us to be suspicious of other believers. It can amount to a sin under certain circumstances. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Holy Quran, "O you who believe, avoid suspicion, for surely suspicion in some cases is a sin." The Prophet of Allah, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Do not search the deficiencies of believers, and do not follow their faults, because he who follows his brother's faults, his own faults will be sought by Allah. And he whose faults are sought by Allah will be disgraced, even if he keeps indoors." Brothers and sisters, we know, we have seen it so many times, different verses of the Holy Quran, different traditions of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, refrain us, stop us from having suspicion, growing suspicion, being suspicious about the believers, right? We've seen it several times, not just once, This is where we need to pay attention to the instructions of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. If we do not do so, then according to the verses of Quran and according to the ahadith of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is going to be suspicious about us. Allah is going to find out, well, he's all-knowing, but he's going to find out, for the lack of better word, the deficiencies we have and expose them in front of others. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the topic of avoiding suspicion when it comes to the believers. We said, do not be suspicious about other believers. This is something Islam teaches us. You know, Islam has stopped us. It has not given us the authority. It has not given us the ability to suspect others. You know, this is something not our job. It's not within our jurisdictions. When we look at a believer, we're not supposed to be thinking negative about them. Because in order for us to be suspicious about anyone, we first have to develop this negative feeling, right? Well, what if it is slightly likely that a believer has committed something wrong? Can we doubt him and be suspicious of him then? Well, let's ask the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. He says, justify your brother's action in the best way, unless you know otherwise, and do not suspect your brother for what he says while you can interpret it as good. So here Imam Ali alayhi salam is educating us that you know otherwise, you know, this clause in there, you know otherwise, it means that you are absolutely sure, 100% sure of the wrong that that believer may have committed. Still, the Imam says that if a believer denies and he says it otherwise and says something different, then interpret it in his favor. Yet you're not allowed to be suspicious and be nosy to find out the faults of another believer, right? And, you know, avoiding this whole idea of being suspicious about other believers, it gives us a very stable and happy life as well. Because now we're starting to trust people. If we are suspicious about other people, especially when it comes to the believers, then we're not going to be comfortable around anyone. And we are not going to be trusting anyone because now we're suspicious about anyone and everyone. And you and I know that there are people who develop this habit of being suspicious about other believers.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The Jeffrey Epstein sex scandal has once again captivated the world's attention, revealing a web of alleged sexual exploitation and abuse involving numerous high-profile individuals, including politicians, businessmen, and celebrities. Jeffrey Epstein, a wealthy financier and convicted sex offender, was arrested in 2019 on federal charges of sex trafficking minors. Epstein allegedly committed the crimes at his Manhattan and Palm Beach, Florida properties, where he abused dozens of underage girls, some as young as 14, and conspired to commit sex trafficking, according to prosecutors. Epstein was found dead in his cell at a federal jail in Manhattan, New York, in August 2019, while he awaited trial on sex trafficking charges. The death was ruled a suicide. Ghislaine Maxwell, his accomplice, is currently serving a 20-year sentence for helping Jeffrey Epstein recruit and groom underage girls. The case gained significant attention due to Epstein's connections to numerous influential figures. Epstein's alleged sex trafficking ring was said to have operated for years, exploiting vulnerable young girls for the pleasure of his wealthy and powerful associates. Documents recently disclosed by the order of the U.S. District Judge Loretta Preska have shed light on the extent of this scandal, mentioning the names of high-profile figures. 19 unsealed documents totaling more than 1,300 pages are part of a civil defamation suit filed by Virginia Giuffre, who alleged that Epstein sexually abused her as a minor. She also accused Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein's former girlfriend, of playing a role in facilitating sex trafficking of minors and pedophilia. Separately, Giuffre also claimed in an email that former President Bill Clinton threatened Vanity Fair magazine not to publish sex trafficking articles related to Epstein. Sarah Ransom is one of the other victims of Epstein's sex trafficking ring who have broken their silence. Sarah Ransom claims that Epstein kept sex tapes involving prominent people. In emails sent to the court investigating Epstein's sex trafficking ring, Sarah Ransom alleges that the Duke of York, Prince Andrew of the UK, the ex-US President Bill Clinton, and the billionaire businessman Sir Richard Branson were filmed by Epstein. According to Sarah Ransom, a Jeffrey Epstein survivor, when my friend had sexual intercourse with Clinton, Prince Andrew, and Richard Branson, sex tapes were in fact filmed on each separate occasion by Jeffrey. Thank God she managed to get a hold of some footage of the filmed sex tapes, which clearly identify the faces of Clinton, Prince Andrew, and Branson having sexual intercourse with her. Several other high-profile figures, including former U.S. Vice President Al Gore, actor Kevin Spacey, the late pop star Michael Jackson, magician David Copperfield, and former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, have also been mentioned in court documents. Among the allegations is the claim that Epstein worked for the Israeli intelligence agency Mossad. Speaking to RT International in 2020, former Israeli intelligence officer Ari Ben-Menash claimed that Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell, and Epstein were Israeli agents.
Now, Jeffrey Epstein is dead. Now, Ghislaine Maxwell, there are reports she's in Paris. You maintain that it was your employer, Robert Maxwell, owner of the Daily Mirror. You say that he was an Israeli agent, and as was his daughter.
He was not my employer. I would like to correct that.
Okay.
We worked together with him.
And okay. You say that his daughter Ghislaine also, though, worked for Israel, and it was Robert Maxwell who introduced Jeffrey Epstein to Ghislaine Maxwell way before the 1990s, as mainstream media is reporting.
Correct. Mr. Epstein was introduced to Ms. Maxwell probably sometime in the 80s. And Mr. Maxwell also thought he might be introducing a fellow to date his daughter. He tried to do a favor to his daughter, to find her a shidduch, as they say in Hebrew, a match.
He asserted that all these scandals were orchestrated by the Mossad for intelligence gathering and blackmailing prominent figures.
Okay, and that didn't really quite work out. I suppose what the most alarming allegations that you've been making are that the entire Epstein operation was a honey trap operation to entrap politicians, policymakers, celebrities, people in the media eye, basically to become Israel's assets.
Correct. That it became basically an intelligence operation to entrap different politicians around the world.
The name of former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak has also been mentioned in the Epstein court documents. Further believes that former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak was aware of the events. Meanwhile, Alan Dershowitz, a well-known pro-Israel lawyer and Harvard Law School professor, has also been linked to Epstein through court documents and witness testimonies.
He has been heavily implicated. He's probably the most implicated throughout this entire trove of documents of the first batch of the 900 and some odd pages of these first court release documents. He's mentioned 137 times. Let's go over some of the things. And to be very clear, he was asked to have sex, or he had sex with underage girls. There were 8 times that he was implicated in crime throughout these documents.
Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu had reportedly planned to employ American advocate Alan Dershowitz's skills to defend Tel Aviv in the International Court of Justice, ICJ, against a case alleging genocide brought forth by South Africa. Dershowitz has vehemently denied any involvement in Epstein's illegal activities, and in turn, to defend himself, resorted to allegations that Palestinian resistance fighters raped Israeli women, fake accusations that even the Israeli officials withdrew back in October 2023. The Epstein court documents have already given rise to honey trap speculations, suggesting the involvement of Mossad and pro-Israel lobbies in using Epstein's activities as a tool for political control. These claims suggest that Epstein's activities were part of a broader operation aimed at controlling American politicians in favor of Israel.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
In the United States, the Supreme Court has allowed federal agents to remove razor wire along the state of Texas's border with Mexico. In a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court justices sided with the Biden administration in the dispute with the state of Texas. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. A narrowly divided Supreme Court on Monday, 22nd of January, sided with the Biden administration in a tense ongoing dispute over the Texas-Mexico border and razor wire fencing installed by the state of Texas that had prohibited federal agents from performing their duties. The court, by a vote of 5-4, cleared the way for federal agents to remove the razor wire, which Biden administration officials and immigration advocates had called dangerous and inhumane. The Department of Homeland Security has also argued that the state's activities interfered with clear federal supremacy in setting border enforcement policy. The Supreme Court's order did not elaborate on the decision. It means federal border agents can resume full control of the contested border area while litigation continues. Supreme Court Justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh said they would have denied the administration's request to lift a lower court injunction that was blocking removal of the razor wire. Texas officials responded to the decision, including Governor Greg Abbott, who wrote, "This is not over," as he vowed to keep preventing the Biden administration from destroying the state's property. "This is not over. Texas's razor wire is an effective deterrent to the illegal crossings that the Biden administration encourages. I will continue to defend Texas's constitutional authority to secure the border and prevent the Biden administration from destroying our property," Governor Greg Abbott wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter. Lieutenant Chris Olivares, the spokesperson for the Texas Department of Public Safety, one of the agencies tasked with executing Governor Greg Abbott's Operation Lone Star, accused the federal government of impeding Texas from protecting its borders and said the state would maintain its current posture by using barriers and wire along the Rio Grande. The state of Texas, under Governor Greg Abbott, Operation Lone Star, will maintain its current posture in deterring illegal border crossings by utilizing effective border security measures, reinforced concertina wire, and anti-climb barriers along the Rio Grande River, Olivares said in a statement on X. The razor wire fencing was installed along the Rio Grande River by Texas authorities as part of Operation Lone Star, an effort launched by Republican Governor Greg Abbott in 2021 to curb illegal immigration into Texas. The state sued the Biden administration in October of 2023 over what they called the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol's practice of cutting, destroying, or otherwise damaging Texas's concertina wire that had been strategically positioned for the purpose of securing the border with Mexico. In November, a federal judge ruled that Texas hadn't provided enough evidence in its request for a preliminary injunction that the federal government broke the law in removing the razor wire, but was critical of the Biden administration's execution of immigration policies. The immigration system at the heart of it all, dysfunctional and flawed as it is, would work if properly implemented. Instead, the status quo is a harmful mixture of political rancor, ego, and economic and geopolitical realities that serves no one, Judge Alia Moses wrote in the order. So destructive is its nature that the nation cannot help but be transfixed by, but simultaneously unable to correct, the present condition. What follows here is but another chapter in this unfolding tragedy. The law may be on the side of the defendants and compel a resolution in their favor today, but it does not excused their culpable and duplicitous conduct. The decision was immediately appealed by Texas Governor Greg Abbott. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals then ruled in the state's favor, saying the lower court legally erred with respect to sovereign immunity and said the wire could only be cut in the event of a medical emergency. In its appeal to the Supreme Court, the Biden administration argued that if accepted, the court's rationale would leave the United States at the mercy of states that could seek to enforce the federal government to conform the implementation of federal immigration law to varying state law regimes. Biden officials also said it would have serious underground consequences, like preventing federal agents from being able to access the area they are charged with patrolling and their ability to quickly respond to emergency situations. Balanced against the impairment of federal law enforcement and risk to human life, the Court of Appeals cited as Texas's harm only the price of wire and the cost of closing a gap created by Border Patrol agents, the administration said. The case is one of many ongoing disputes between the Biden administration and the state of Texas when it comes to the border with Mexico. CNN Cable News Network has also covered this story and tells us more. The U.S. Supreme Court is allowing U.S. Border Patrol agents to remove razor wire deployed by Texas's Republican Governor Greg Abbott's security initiative at the U.S.-Mexico border, while the state's legal challenges to the practice plays out in the courts of law. The Supreme Court Justice's order is a major victory for President Joe Biden in his ongoing dispute with Texas Governor Greg Abbott over border policy, which had become especially fraught in recent days after three migrants drowned in a section of the Rio Grande River that state officials have blocked agents' access to, prompting the Biden administration to further press for the High Court's intervention. A federal appeals court last month ordered the Border Patrol agents to stop removing razor wire along a small stretch of the Rio Grande River while court proceedings continue. And the Justice Department asked the justices earlier this month to step in on an emergency basis to wipe away that order, which they did on Monday, 22nd of January. Supreme Court Justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh said they would have denied the federal request. Steve Vladek, a professor at the University of Texas School of Law, said that while the order is a victory for the Biden administration, the delay in issuing it raises future questions. Whatever one thinks of current immigration policy, it ought not to be that controversial that states cannot prevent the federal government from enforcing federal law, lest we set the stage for Democratic-led states to similarly attempt to frustrate the enforcement of federal policies by Republican presidents, Professor Vladek said. That four Supreme Court justices would still have left the lower court injunction in place will be taken, rightly or wrongly, as a sign that some of those long-standing principles of constitutional federalism might be in a degree of flux. White House spokesman Angelo Fernandez told CNN that the White House was pleased the Supreme Court vacated the injunction that prevented frontline personnel from performing vital federal functions and interfered with their ability to address urgent humanitarian situations and enforce our laws. Andrew Mahalaris, a spokesman for Texas Governor Greg Abbott, said in a statement, "The absence of razor wire and other deterrent strategies encourages migrants to make unsafe and illegal crossings between ports of entry." He said Governor Greg Abbott will continue fighting to defend Texas's property and its constitutional authority to secure the border with Mexico.
The entire population of Gaza is enduring destruction unparalleled in recent history. The words of UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Hello and thanks for tuning in. This is Gaza Under Attack. We'll get to our guests in a moment, but before that, a quick look at some of the latest developments. The UN Security Council holds its quarterly open debate with the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza top of the agenda. Israeli occupation forces continue tank and drone strikes on the city of Khan Yunis, with at least 210 people killed over the past 24 hours. More than 200 occupation soldiers dead and 4,000-plus wounded in the Gaza Strip since apartheid Israel started its ground invasion of the territory. Another U.S.-UK strike on Yemen. The country's Ansarullah fighters say they're targeting Israeli-linked vessels because of Tel Aviv's genocidal war on Gaza. In Iraq, resistance groups vow to continue their operations against military bases, where U.S. military forces and trainers are stationed, in retaliation for Washington's unqualified support for the relentless Israeli war on Gaza after the U.S. military carried out an airstrike against sites used by the Iraqi anti-terror forces. In less than 4 months, the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza has killed at least 25,700 Palestinians and wounded at least 63,000 others, most of them women and children. Let's discuss these rapid developments with my guests, Professor Jonathan Rosenhet, Emeritus Professor at the London School of Economics and Chair of the British Committee for the Universities of Palestine, and Katie Durbin, a photographer and activist who joins us via Skype from Glossop, Derbyshire. Thank you both for being here. I'll start with you, Professor, if that's okay. The intense shelling in central Gaza in Khan Yunis, as we just heard, has rendered the idea of any safe space in the entire territory redundant by now. I just want to hear your assessment of where things are or where they're headed, you think.
Well, there are things that are happening, and then there's the way they're portrayed by spokespeople for Israel, and which are then faithfully relayed by media, which is extraordinarily biased in its reporting. We all know by now that Israelis are murdered and Palestinians are only killed. There's no moral agency in what not a negative moral agency mm-hmm. in anything that an Israeli soldier could do, because they are obviously in the right.
Mm-hmm. That's certainly the case, of course, as far as corporate media yeah. is concerned. Let me go to Katie now. Israel suffered the biggest loss of occupation soldiers, 24 of them, 21 in a single incident. Might this change how Israelis view the Gazan bombardment?
You'd hope so. I think we're going to see what we're seeing with Israeli soldiers is we're seeing children being brainwashed and sent to kill defenseless civilians and children. And I think we're going to see the aftermath of this for Israeli soldiers and Israeli young people. I think we're going to see a big mental health crisis. We're probably going to see a big rise in the suicide rate as well. But I would hope that this might change their minds, but I don't know if it will.
All right. Professor, I want to bring you a quote by the UK's chief rabbi, Ephraim